Back to electricity prices. I had mentioned that some of this carbon really has added a lot of uncertainty to the pricing. And so just kind of taking a look at 2023 at budget time, which was almost about a year ago, 2023 flat price was $50.49. And currently it's $97.03. So a huge change in 2023 prices in just about a year's time. And then off to the left in 2022, you can see that at budget, flat prices were 55, almost $56 per megawatt hour. And now we're seeing $67.90 per megawatt hour. And so that's part of the reason, as Mike had mentioned, why we're seeing the actual forecast above budget for wholesale revenue. I think one other thing to point out on this is Q3 prices. We saw this year, kind of early September, prices go to close to $1,000 per megawatt hour for about 2 days. And so we're seeing kind of a risk premium on Q3 out in the future. So you can see the black line really spiking up in Q3. Switching gears to the Lake Chelan level webpage. We're pretty early in the water year this year. It's just looking very normal right now. We're so early that the forecasts are pretty close to 100% of average. The drawdown curve is it's actually a dark green line, about a half a foot above the target curve at this point in time, but looking pretty normal at this point.
Janet, before you go on, I always have to jump in on this page.
I was going to say, you always have to
I
jump in on
do.
this page.
Oh, I, you know, well, first of all, I want to say welcome to Kelly Allen, who is a fellow Chelan Mansonite, who will be on the board, sitting on the board. So welcome. Congratulations. Carnan just left, but I think he'll be back. Anyway, Kelly had asked me some questions this summer about lake level and had heard some comments from community members, and I brought those forward to Kirk, and we looked at this. We always look at this curve. And so I was just going to say to Kelly, I don't know if you have this, but you're going to start looking at this a lot and rely on this. It's very good. And it's also, there's a Current app. You can get an app, and it's called Current. Just go to the App Store. You have it. Good. Oh, you're on top of it. You're ahead of me. Yeah, so that's very cool. And if you scroll down, if you go down, you'll see this particular curve, and you can manipulate it and move wherever you want on it. Anyway, it's really useful. Yeah. And so I was going to say to Carnan as well, welcome and congratulations.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yep, we're talking about Lake Chelan level. And you probably, having been on the commission, you're aware of this curve, but I was just saying this is a really helpful curve. Nice to have. It's on the Current app as well, which you can get.
I've seen that, and the issue in Chelan mainly is it's either too low or too high.
According to most people, exactly. Yeah, and the other thing that I told Kelly when we were talking about this, according to FERC, well, not FERC, according to the license obligations, 1098 is considered full reservoir. Well, those of us that have lived at Lake Chelan forever think of 1100s are full reservoir, right? But that's not according to this and according to the license. So we get to 1099, and that's usually about as high as we get. I've seen some years where we're at 1100, haven't you?
We can't go over 1100, so
No.
we make sure we leave some buffer there. But the targets are actually 1099 after
Right.
July.
Yeah.
So we shoot for staying as close to those targets as we can. But keeping in mind how much water, that's the delicate balance, how much water is still up in the mountains and
Oh.
still to come. And
Yeah.
so.
It was a really tough year for you guys to manage. I don't know how you did it because we were, what, in June? Didn't we still have like 20% of the snow in the mountains in on June 1, possibly?
So, quick question. Does this mean that going forward, we're going to have to hear about Lake Chelan twice as much as we have in
Hopefully.
Yeah,
the
Randy.
Okay.
I think
just check.
Just the other thing to keep in mind is just there's 7 objectives for the license that we're trying to meet, including the flows through the Chelan Gorge and recreation. These targets are one of them, but there's a number of different objectives that we're shooting for, and it's a delicate balance in trying to achieve all those objectives at the same time and keep the lake at the target level.
Yeah, so. I may not have another opportunity. I just want to say thank you to Janet and the whole team. You guys are magicians. I don't know how you do it. I mean, especially this last year was so challenging with all that snow left in the mountains, and you're trying to bring the lake up, but you got to leave enough room for it. And it's magic to me. I don't know how you do it, how you balance everything, but many, many kudos to you guys.
Thanks, Ann. John Wosniewski and Becky Keating have been watching the lake, too. They were kind of in charge of the lake. I'm just reporting today.
Uh-huh.
And since we do have a couple new commissioners coming on, we would offer up maybe during a study session the kind of
for lunch. We'll be back at 1 o'clock, and we'll have Rob back then.
Well, we'll go to the public hearing right at 1, and right.
then
we'll circle back.
Okay.
Yep.
Great.
Thank you, Janet.
Thanks, Janet. Thanks, Mike.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the November 21st, 2022 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. And for those who are online, please mute your screens. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. And today we're going to start off. This is our second public hearing on the 2023 budget, and we want to welcome Dave Nelson here to lead us through our second hearing. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Commissioner McKenna. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Dave Nelson, Manager of Strategic Financial Planning, and I am here with the second of our two budget hearings on the 2023 budget. And we'll be going through mostly changes in the budget that since the presentation that was provided to you 2 weeks ago on the 7th. Am I in charge of the slides now? Okay.
Can be.
You are now.
I love it. I love it. I got it. Okay. So today we'll cover a quick timeline, the changes that we've seen since the November 7th presentation. We'll go over the combined results and then some next steps. Would remind you that all of the slides that were presented in the presentation on the 7th have been updated and are included in the appendix. We aren't going to be going through all of them, but they are attached. We also attached a draft resolution, as well as a listing of all the capital projects that are in the budget for 2023 in your package. So those are things that you have available to review.
And so just to be clear, the resolution is not for today. It's for December 5th.
All of a sudden, I'm looking at them.
Right. Yep. I should have mentioned that. Just to be clear.
I wish I'd have seen that. I was looking down.
Yeah, that's just the draft resolution. We'll be coming back on the 5th, as this slide shows. And as we mentioned, this is the second of the two public hearings for the budget. Okay, so talking about the changes, we had a fairly significant change in the bottom line, increasing about $14 million from $89 million projected for 2023 to $103 million. And the big reason for that change is the updated load forecast is primarily the reason. As you heard this morning, they were talking about the load forecast being updated, and as a result of that, some of the local load forecasts were reduced, and overall about a 10 average megawatt shift from what was planned for our retail and our service revenues. into our net wholesale revenue. And with the strong power prices we're seeing in the market right now, that is the primary reason. About a $13 million increase in operating revenues, $15.5 million increase in net wholesale revenue. We also saw some increased prices since we last were here on the 7th, as well as an updated specified source forecast. So all those things contributed to net wholesale revenue being up quite significantly. Service revenues due to the lower load forecast were down about $2.8 million overall, despite off-system sales number being a bit higher due to the improved market prices. We also saw a smaller change in the long-term hydro contract revenues, up a little bit due to an increase in the hydro O&M, as those are cost-based contracts, so we recover the costs that we incur in part from our long-term contracts. So looking at the operating expense changes since the November 7th presentation, just an increase of about $0.7 million. Our O&M expenses were up about $1.6 million. With refinement of O&M in a lot of areas, but the primary drivers of that change were the O&M and capital plans, the electric line operations, as they reviewed their schedules of projects that we'd be undergoing and what amount of labor and other things would be incurred, be charged to capital versus O&M, made some adjustments there. We also saw some increased costs of forecast in our energy resources area. And our depreciation was actually a decrease as we revise the schedules that we saw, and that as those schedules are pushed out, that reduces our depreciation for 2023. Taxes were also down a little bit with the decreased service revenues. So overall, an increase of just under $1 million. The non-operating activity, we had a decrease in net expense of $1.4 million. The interest earnings, one of the drivers there is our higher cash balances that we're projecting. From improved bottom line, $0.4 million, and then capital contributions from increased customer line extensions is another area. We're anticipating almost $1 million more than what we had forecasted on the 7th. So in the in our capital investment area of the budget, we did see a $2 million increase from $181 to $183 million. As we discussed at the 7th, there was a presentation then about the service operations service center increase in the budget, $5 million. This is just putting those numbers in that were discussed at that last meeting. It's not an additional change from what was discussed there. We also saw the IT data center modernization project, mostly a move of budget from 2022 to 2023, as that project's been delayed a bit. Also an increase in costs with more closer review of the budget needed for that project. And then offsetting those increases, we saw distribution substations and feeders reevaluate their schedule, what they were going to get done, look at some constraints that might be there with supply chain and other issues. And so they moved about $4 million out into 2024. We also had $1 million decrease in the make ready work for fiber distribution towers. So overall, $2 million increase. So this slide brings together the combined financials for 2023, the bottom line of $103 million compared to what we presented on the 7th of the $89 million. It's a 16% increase. As I mentioned, quite a big increase due to the load forecast change primarily and the higher revenues in the net surplus. On the capital expenditures side, overall, with the regulatory assets and other things, this was about a $2 million increase from the prior presentation on the 7th, about 1.1%. Overall, lower because of the significant customer-paid regulatory liability, the contributions from the customer, a little bit lower than in 2022, but overall, the volume of work is still very significant. And look at the total capital of $218 million compared to the $195, $196 that we budgeted in 2022. Still a significant amount of work planned. And then looking at the combined district expenditures, the changes I discussed with the operating expenses and other items rolled into this was a small increase of about $3 million overall. And we're seeing it's about a 0.6% change from what was presented on the 7th. So overall, pretty close in line to the 2022 budget, actually just under 1% less than what was budgeted for 2022. Because of the changes we saw in primarily in the revenues, all of the metrics we showed you on the 7th have improved slightly for 2023. So we're in compliance with all those metrics, expecting to see some very strong results compared to our financial metrics. And then looking at the five-year plan with the increase overall with the specified source and the higher revenues, the lower load forecast carries out into the future also. We saw overall stronger metrics throughout the forecast period. And as we mentioned previously, we were forecasting some external borrowing in 2025. Our forecast is now showing that we don't have any need during this forecast period for external borrowings. We do plan to do some internal loans for the hydros with their heavy investment in the modernization and other programs. So we'll see some internal loans for that, but no external borrowing is currently forecasted. Obviously, the current pricing we're seeing in the market is always subject to change, and we won't necessarily see, we aren't going to see exactly what we forecast for sure, but it could be higher, could be lower. But what we're forecasting right now, very, very strong results, and do not anticipate to see borrowing in this time period. And a reminder again of our smaller system metrics, still see some opportunities here for improvement in the operating coverage with rising costs. We're seeing these systems falling a little behind where we'd like them to be. Also, the wastewater with the Shaston loan still outstanding is different than what our planning assumptions were. Those really are unchanged, essentially, or pretty close to unchanged from our prior presentation, these numbers. So that's a kind of a quick presentation, really just focusing on the changes. We're ready to respond to any questions as much as we can, providing any additional detail. And our plan is to be back on December 5th, hopefully without making changes, but we'll let the board know if there are any, and asking for approval of the budget on the 5th.
Okay. Questions, comments?
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
See you on the 5th. All right, commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us, including resolution number 12. Do I hear a motion for acceptance?
Would move we approve the consent agenda as presented with number 12.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
That was an aye, so we're approved. Thank you, Dennis. All right. Okay, Kirk, let's move on into the regular agenda, resolution number 13.
Okay, I'll introduce 13 and 14, and then we'll circle back and catch Rob afterwards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you want? No, I forgot about Rob.
We can go right through. I don't think this will take long.
Okay.
I don't think Rob has a plane to catch. Okay. So resolution 13 is a resolution restating and revising policies and delegating authority regarding real estate transactions and execution of real estate documents, licenses, and permits. And Eric is going to take this one.
Sure. Thanks, Kirk. Thanks, Commissioners. Eric Walkless, General Counsel. So hopefully over the weekend you received the email from me that sort of went through what the proposed updates to this resolution are. So the resolution presents some modest revisions, in my opinion, to what has been a historic real estate delegation resolution last adopted in 2008. There was also a short month or two later update to that as well that didn't change anything substantially. So we've been methodically sort of walking through delegation resolutions as we go along over the years to get, at least in my mind, them lined up with what I think of as the right delegation path, and that is board to the general manager and general manager down to staff at the levels that he believes are appropriate. So you can see the resolution has a number of different sections. I actually walked through each of them. I don't know if there's a need to do that today unless somebody has specific questions, but I would summarize and simply say that in addition to the right delegation path, we have tried to take the opportunity to clear up, I'm going to say, issues that periodically cause confusion throughout the organization on those kinds of routine real estate transactions that, candidly, our staff are engaging in every day as they do the business of the district. And so over the years, those have come up from time to time, generally dependent on a quirky set of circumstances, and we come before the board for action on those where it doesn't clearly fall in the delegation resolution scope, and that's what we would intend to continue to do, although we hope we've cleaned that up substantially. I do want to say, as a reminder and for the record, that this does not in any way delegate surplus and sale of district property, real property, nor does it delegate the purchase and sale of a fee interest in real property pursuant to any type of a purchase and sale agreement or other agreement for the purchase of land. It does continue, it always has, and it will continue to delegate certain transactions or the taking or giving of interests in either third-party property by the district. Think easements, think right to use, think citing our assets, and then the use of district lands, think permits for the use and the boat docks, etc. That is really, frankly, the sum total of it. There aren't a lot of changes. There are two new paragraphs that make those additional clarifications and the one shift for the delegation path. But happy to entertain questions. I should also say that if the resolution is here for action, if you're ready, even if you have other questions or concerns or pushback or you want soak time, that's fine too. It's ready. We can adjust at your pleasure. Happy to entertain questions.
Any questions?
I read through the email that Eric sent. It was about as clear as mud, but I, no, that's not true.
Well, that didn't work out exactly how I planned it.
You did an excellent job, and so I don't have any questions.
Okay.
But I guess it's just a comment. Knowing that you're methodically going through resolutions, and the fact that the last time we talked about this has been some time, a couple of years.
This particular one?
Yeah.
Yes, it's been in the hopper for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Waiting to come across the finish line.
Means that you still have a lot of work to do.
Job security. Yes, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm glad you finally got to it because it was
an
important one to get to.
Yes, and to be honest, I need to give primary credit to Daniel Apple and Dan Frazier and Vicky down in properties who have been backstopping my language all along the way.
All right. Thank you. Let's move on to resolution 14.
Okay. Agenda item 14 is resolution authorizing amendment number 2 to service agreement SA number 22-12254 with Willamette Cultural Resources Associates to provide cultural resource support for construction of the new service center. With us is Dan Frazier. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. So as Eric said, we've been working on that off and on for several years, but we really do appreciate getting that closed up because there are some things that we do that we come to the commission and I think we get the question, why are you here? So hopefully we'll have those not becoming so often. Today, the resolution I'm bringing before you is for adding funds essentially and extending a contract with Willamette CRA, Cultural Resource Associates, for working with our service center project team to complete that project in a timely manner and with appropriate level of oversight for cultural resources. So we first started working with Willamette in April of this year. They were brought on board to help us navigate through some difficulties with our permitting process and helping us with obtaining a new permit. They've done a really good job. We've been very, very happy with their work. They've got a lot of experience. They have good relationship with our tribal partners and the state. And so they've been a great resource for us, not just to get through the permitting process, but to help us understand how we should be engaging. One of the things they've done is they have a weekly reporting process that we send out to all of the tribal interests and the state every Friday or Monday. Got ours this morning, this week's update, and it goes to an in-depth explanation of what's going on site, just a heightened level of transparency. It's been really well received. The comments I get back from the tribes generally is thanks for the information. Once in a while, there's a, can we talk about this? But they're always very appreciative of that. The other part of Willamette's work has been in obtaining that permit was coming up with a way to deal with other cultural finds on the site when they happen. And we knew they were going to happen, and so they developed a process that we follow, and it allows us to continue working on the site, maybe not in the same area, but we find something, we just simply move 30 feet away, let the archaeologists do their work, notify the tribes, and we can be back to work the next day on that same area. So that's been a huge improvement for our progress and our prosecution of that project. So they've done a really good job. So the amount of this is $750,000, and that's supplementing the $200,000 that the original agreement was written for. The reason we did the $200,000 initially was because we planned on having them obtain a permit or work on obtaining a permit and do the work required to start up again, and we anticipated a substantial amount of work to start up again. But we were able to negotiate that down quite a ways, and so we've actually been able to monitor and do the ongoing monitoring under this contract, and now we are into we're into that ongoing monitoring through the duration of the project. So this amount is included in the amount that we presented to the board last meeting in terms of the overall project cost increases. So this is consistent with what we identified in that number. So happy to answer any other questions.
Any questions, commissioners?
Just good to know that we've got a good process in place because we've got another year of construction.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll be landscaping out there. We have to monitor landscape and anything, so we're going to be out there for a while.
Great. I just wanted to correct your vocabulary, Dan. That's not the service center. That's the Taj Mahal.
All my years of building public infrastructure, that is the one name I've tried never to accept.
All right. Commissioners, at this time, do I have a motion for resolutions 13 and 14?
I move that we accept resolutions 13 and 14 as presented.
I'll second.
Any discussion or further questions on that, either of those? Hearing none, all those in favor of resolution 13 and 14 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motions, resolutions 13 and 14 pass. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Now that we've made Mr. Rob Davis wait, let's go ahead and bring him back up. I did that on purpose, I'm sure. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So I am here for our second semi-annual update on transmission policies and related issues. When the board adopted the tariff and related policies last year, staff was directed to come back at least twice a year and update you on things in the world of transmission, and honestly, I wasn't sure we'd be able to have enough information for two updates, but amazingly we do. So we've got new stuff for you this time. We will start with our tariff implementation and how that's going. Short answer is it's going very well. Talk about some developments in the FERC world, some NOPRs that are out there, and then some other transmission developments of interest. So starting with our implementation, I've got a couple things highlighted. The first is our interconnection request queue, and it's moving the way it's supposed to. So we're getting calls still from interested parties about what it would take to connect to our system, but what we're finding is that they're actually looking at our website, going through the materials. They have a lot fewer questions And those that decide to get in the queue, it's very straightforward. They pay the deposit and we start the process. So as designed, no hiccups that I've heard of from our transmission group. So that's good news. The other piece, we have a couple of legacy transmission contracts with irrigation districts on our system that are expiring in the near future, and the transmission team has started working with them about how to transition those. So when we developed the tariff, we had discussions about what it would look like to take service in the new format, so they're aware it's coming, and now we're talking the nuts and bolts of how we move from existing contracts to new contracts without losing the character of service they're getting for their irrigation power. Moving on to FERC World, the last update we told you about the transmission planning NOPR to update some of the Order 1000 provisions. That is still pending at FERC, but they've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes. There was earlier this month a joint federal-state task force to talk about some of the cost allocation issues, and next month FERC is having a staff-led workshop on interregional, so between the different planning regions, how to address transmission capacity between those regions. So, for example, we're a northern grid, and how do we connect to California ISO and make sure there's sufficient capacity between regions. So a lot of activity there. I couldn't tell you when we expect to see a final rule, but it is still in the works. And then probably our big update for this session is on FERC's interconnection NOPR. So they released this summer a NOPR to improve their interconnection process. Just as a reminder, we're not jurisdictional, so we would only adopt these changes if we looked at them, decided they were good for the district, and wanted to put them into our tariff. We're largely following the FERC pro forma for interconnection. There are a few things that we decided weren't appropriate for the size of our queue and the size of our shop, but we'd make a similar determination on these reforms and then bring those back to the board for consideration. Good news is there's a lot of good stuff in this NOPR. Maybe not affecting us directly, but certainly indirectly. And the big one is the change from the current first-come, first-served process to a first-ready, first-served. So currently it's a serial process. The first person to put in a request gets studied, looking at the system as is. The next person to put in a request gets studied, looking at the system as is, plus the person in front of them, even if they're not interconnected. And you just keep going down the line. The problem is if person number three shows up and then later pulls out, person four through 20 is having to be restudied, and the process starts all over, and it's very inefficient. So FERC is putting in has proposed some reforms to take care of that, starting with informational studies so that prospective interconnectors can have a general idea of what a utility system looks like, where better options are for interconnecting, worse options are, to save the hassle on the front end of choosing a bad spot and having to be restudied. FERC is also moving towards annual cluster studies so that within a window, all the requests that come in get studied together. They share some of the study cost depending on size and complexity. This is an option that's available now, but FERC is going to make it a standard option for the interconnection process. And then finally, to prevent people from just kind of putting in requests out of curiosity, there's going to be more stringent financial commitments and possibly even some withdrawal penalties so that somebody can't get in an interconnection queue, decide things aren't looking perfect, get out, cause restudies for everyone, and then come back in later with no burden on themselves. So hopefully all those things will make for a more efficient queue. Some other things that FERC is hoping to improve: the addition of firm deadlines in the study process. Currently, utilities are supposed to use reasonable efforts. FERC is proposing that they hold the hard deadlines. This one's a little tricky because there are plenty of things outside of the utility's control, but the idea is that if a study is supposed to take 90 days, that everyone comes into it knowing it'll be 90 and not, you know, 90 plus with no firm deadline. This other major bullet on here, the affected system study process, is another one that even we've seen in our interconnections that could use some improvement. So currently, when somebody comes to us for an interconnection, we do a preliminary study and we say, well, there are impacts on perhaps Douglas's system or BPA's system or even down into Grant's system. and you, developer, go talk to them and see if you can work it out and come back to us and we'll coordinate, but it's not standardized. So FERC wants to standardize that with a specific process and specific agreements to make that move a little faster. There's really not any impetus on the affected system to act in a timely manner with the center system that's being interconnected with. So hopefully that'll get more coordination from the parties that aren't directly impacted, but whose cooperation we need to move forward with the project. So, those are the highlights. There are a number of other reforms in the NOBR, but those are really the big ones that can really streamline a process. And for a system like ours, we have, the Microsoft project where they've already signed an interconnection agreement. We don't have a long queue of folks stacked up behind them. These won't impact us directly, but with BPA's system, they've got a huge queue. They've just gone through a process to look at ways to more efficiently provide transmission from all these requesters with CETA and things like that, get a essentially a gold rush of new renewables development. It's going to impact their queue, and we see some spillover from that. People who know that it's going to take them many, many years in BPA's system to even get interconnected might come to us and say, can you do it faster if we locate a little closer to you? So improvements there will help us and keep us from getting speculative inquiries. Again, this is only going to apply to us if we adopt it, but there are certainly some things in there that at first blush look like reforms that we would want to put into our tariff as well. So we'll track that and report back as appropriate. And that last bullet there, I just want to make a plug for LPPC. I'm sure you're aware of all the good work that our trade groups do for us, but on the planning NOPR and this one, they've done really great work consolidating comments from the public power community. Took a lot of good info from us and wrapped it in, and they just do a great job of getting information to FERC and getting some response from it too. On the regional planning, one of those workshops was in direct response to some information that LPPC submitted at the request of the member utilities. So some great work there and here also. So just wanted to give them a little shout out. And then wrapping up with our kind of mixed bag of other transmission things happening. Last time here, we talked about the Infrastructure and Jobs Act and some transmission funding that was in that. The recently passed Inflation Recovery Act has some funding provisions as well that you can see up there. It's some loans for transmission development and the National Interest Electric Transmission Corridors. These were established, I think, in the EPAC of 2005. It's supposed to be a way to get high priority paths, have transmission built in them for areas that are of good interregional interest. Hasn't got a lot of traction, so hopefully the funding will help projects get sited there. Some additional funding for siting for different renewable dependent transmission or transmission that will facilitate more renewables development. And some additional funding for interregional and offshore development stakeholder processes. One of the problems, perennial problems with transmission, it just touches a lot of people. You're crossing a lot of space, a lot of agencies, a lot of interested stakeholders, and so finding ways to navigate that is at the forefront of a lot of people's minds, which carries over into our Washington State activity, which is a little unusual to report on state activity in a transmission update, but it's getting a lot of interest in Olympia right now. We've seen some outlines of potential bills. There's a lot of folks talking about what can be done at the state level to facilitate transmission. So a couple updates there. One is from the CETA arena. Amongst other things, they were tasked with investigating what could be done to facilitate transmission, knowing that utilities were going to need a lot of new renewable build out to meet their clean energy targets under CETA. And the work group tasked with looking at that is recommending that state agencies staff up so that they can take a larger role in transmission planning, transmission siting. This isn't an area that the state agencies usually deal with in a lot of detail, so the recommendation is to get some expertise so that they can start addressing that.
Does the state already have a history of being involved in any transmission?
I don't believe so. It's largely preempted. It's directly covered by the Federal Power Act, and it's an area of FERC's jurisdiction. Even transmission rates are the transmission rates themselves are a FERC jurisdictional question under the Federal Power Act. And to the extent the state is involved, it's usually for that portion of transmission rates that's applied to retail customers, I believe.
Then what, I mean, it raises questions in my mind.
It raises questions in a lot of mine.
Okay.
you're not alone there. It's such a broad topic too that I had a good conversation with Tracy about that this morning actually, and it's trying to understand where are as organizations, where are our strengths and where can we provide some good input to this process. And for the state, it's not, they're not a utility, they don't have that sort of background, they're not really a planning agency, but they do have organizations that have information on a statewide picture of, load growth, expected load growth, topography, things like wildfire risk, right? If you're building new lines, you want to build them in areas of high risk if you can avoid it. Does the state have the ability to give utilities a more holistic picture of how things are going in the state? Can they help with some of these local siting and permitting issues to speed the process? And so there are some areas where state agencies could perhaps provide some benefit. And then there are others where I would offer there, it would be more of a hindrance than a help for the state to be involved. So again, this is in its infancy, but definitely something we're keeping an eye on.
Keep it from becoming a full-grown adult.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that last... bullet probably got your attention as well, that there might actually be a state role in building and financing transmission lines, which would be a new role for the state. And personally, I don't think one that they'd be well suited for, especially when you consider that it's going to be a regional problem. There's probably not a lot of transmission needs that are just Washington to Washington. And even if there were, they have to interact with a system that is Pacific Northwest wide. So wanted to bring this to your attention because we've seen that sort of thing floating out there, but we're going to continue to advocate for an efficient solution that considers the fact that we are part of an interconnected region-wide system.
Do you know if the State Association is familiar with this? It sounds like something that that they would be wanting to maybe get involved in.
State PUD Association.
That is a good question. I would think so, but I haven't asked. I know Kelly has been very involved in getting this information out to us very quickly when it comes in, and usually they're on that sort of a distribution, but definitely a place where we could stay involved with fellow utilities.
I might, if you don't mind, I might bring it up with George and just see what his level of, he's the director.
Oh, sure.
And to see what his level of interest or concern might be. This, I think, squarely fits in his wheelhouse for something to be looking at. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you, Rob.
No questions. I think that's all I had. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted
don't
to.
Take
hey,
off.
Yep. Yeah. Let Rob sit there
not
for a minute.
So easy.
Have a seat, Rob.
We still have them for a while. We can boss them around for a bit.
I wanted to reinforce one point Rob made, which is I was looking at the Bonneville annual report and seeing the amount of transmission service requests over the last year. They had a graph in there that showed the requests over the last 5 years, and it was just staggering in terms of where it's gone from just as recent as 2018 to 2022 is almost a 3 to 4 times in terms of the amount of requests. And so I do think Rob's point of transmission being an area that's we're going to likely see some spillover as a result of that, and amongst a number of other things, including the funding proposals that are out there. So this is something we're going to have to really keep a close eye on. And And kudos to the team that spent a lot of time putting together our policies and our rates. And to Rob's point, the information is publicly available, and it's I can only assume that since we do have three requests in there right now, I can only assume that there would have been probably many more had that stuff not been there, in which case our staff would be fielding all those questions and working through the process. And so I think it's just a good investment of time to get us ready for this. So thank you, Rob, and the team that worked on that. And I'd also like to say that this is Rob's last board meeting, and Rob has a career opportunity that he's accepted. And just want to say, Rob, how much we appreciate the time we had with you and the great job that you've done, and that we will miss you in a big way, you and your kids that attend meetings sometimes on Microsoft Teams.
For the commissioner's benefit, I've been whacked in the head on a meeting with a pool noodle on a couple occasions.
They have their own phones. We text them and tell them when to do it.
When he gets out. It's out of love, though.
Oh, the last one wasn't with a pool noodle.
No, that was open hand, also out of love.
So I just want to echo it. Rob's an important part of our team. He didn't come to the district as part of our team. It became pretty quickly apparent that there would be a lot of value in that, because he was obviously so skilled with his background that he would do a lot of the work and then send it on to us for review, and he would be the person that we would normally ask to review it. So super excited for Rob, super depressed for the rest of us. Really hope to stay in touch, really enjoyed having Rob here. I was lamenting the fact this morning that I got an email that said Rob's 7th anniversary was just around the corner. So made almost 7 years, and appreciate every one of them, the work and the friendship.
Thank you. So. Then,
may I make a comment?
Go ahead, Dennis.
Rob, I've really come to appreciate you and the quality of your work. There's a level of professionalism that you bring every time to the table. Your demeanor, your social skills, your thoroughness, your gentleness, your professionalism is just outstanding. You've been a great team member. I cannot thank you enough for the 7 years. Surprises me it's been that long. I mean, it's gone really quick. But wish you well in your future endeavors, and just want to personally say thanks, and thanks for being that great role model, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
We're still negotiating, Commissioner, for Rob to come back and do the semi-annual transmission update.
Thank you all, and it's been a great time. And I've told this to some other folks before, but when I got to the district, it was the fastest and easiest integration of any place I've worked. Just almost from day one, it felt like I was, supposed to be here and part of the team and part of a group that was just good to be together. And that's going to stick with me. It's been a really great place to work, and I've really enjoyed it.
Well, Rob and I had a chance to talk out in the hall, and I just like to echo what's been said and what Eric said. But I wish you the very best. It's definitely our loss, but I want you to know our doors are always open if you change your mind and you ever see the opportunity. So, anyway, you've been a great team player. We really appreciated having you here, and you've done excellent work. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Rob and I also chatted out in the hall before the meeting, and I expressed the same sentiments. Our utility is better for having had you, and we will feel your absence most definitely. So thanks for what you gave us.
Absolutely.
Best of luck in your new adventure.
Thank you.
Sounded exciting.
Yep, I get to stay in the Northwest energy space and in transmission, and there are really a handful of us that actually do enjoy transmission work, so that'll be fun.
Will you be staying in Portland?
Yeah, I'll still be in Vancouver still going to a lot of the regional meetings and you know, trying to establish better relationships here with the Northwest Consumer Owns.
Great. Well, hopefully our paths will cross again.
I think they will. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Rob. He's already in the queue.
All right. Kirk, let's move on into manager items.
I've got two items. I'll invite Sean up while I'm talking about the first one. The first one, just wanted to point out in your board packet, was the quarterly project update reports. So you have those. Feel free to let us know if you have any questions on any of those. And for the second item, Sean Smith is going to go over the resource adequacy program that we discussed this morning in preparation for coming back on December 5th. Sean?
Good morning, Commissioner Sean Smith, Managing Director of Energy Resources again. Good afternoon. Wow. Yeah. That's been all day meetings here.
Sean, and can I preface this a little bit with two new commissioners that any help to get them up to speed in your background would be helpful?
Sure. So I'll go through that at a very high level and can always discuss offline with them too what they need background information.
Thank you.
We've been here many times before, starting as far back as March 2nd, 2020. We had an overview of the resource adequacy program. And then we had an April 5th of 2021 update and then August 16th of 2021 update. So there's some old, we can send, if you'd like, those presentations around.
It'd probably be good, Sean, just to start really big picture.
Yep.
What's going on in the Northwest and how this fits in with that.
Right. So I'll review the resource adequacy. I'll review the RAP program specifically, then go through a timeline, pros and cons, and then answer any questions. And we'll come back December 5th with a request for approval of a resolution to participate in RAP. So resource adequacy at the highest level, it's the ability of the electric power system to serve load across a broad range of weather, system operating conditions, and is subject to the long-term standard of maximum reliability. So when we look at our load, what we're looking at is, can we meet our peak load? And it's measured by month. So they talked today about close to a 500 megawatt peak in the winter. So they're going to look at us being able to hit that 500 megawatts and then also have a safety margin above that. And usually that safety margin is roughly 15 to 20% more than our actual load. And we share those across all the RAP participants. So what we do there is everyone is adding that 15 to 20%. So if you have an outage, you can rely on someone else in that group. So strengthen numbers. And then you're looking at this whole entire region. You saw the map earlier. It was basically the whole western U.S. minus California because they have their own resource adequacy program. So why do we need this? I mean, people are asking, you know, we've been up here in the Pacific Northwest and have had lots of hydro. You've seen with the Clean Energy Transformation Act and other legislation, the Climate Commitment Act, that a lot of intermittent solar and wind will be built in the future. So before we had hydro, hydro can't really get built anymore, sort of, kind of, if you wait a couple decades, maybe. So now, with all these enhanced requirements, we're going to take a lot more of these intermittent resources. So what that does is, when you look at what they call it is a capacity factor. So whereas hydro, we're like at 80 or 90%, a solar may only get 10%, right? Because as this, in the summer, as the sun goes down, people get home, they turn on their air conditioning, and boom, you get that big uptick in the late afternoon from people turning on their ACs. Same here in the winter when it's really cold and the sun is not up and the resistance heat kicks in, suddenly we get over that 500 megawatts in the winter when the resistance heat comes on. So what this does is provides a clear uniform standard for accountability across all participants. And it'll establish how much capacity Chelan needs in particular. So there's studies done, and they go through lots of analysis on what we need to bring to the table. It also creates transparency across all utilities that sign up for this program. And then it's hard to picture now, but in the future, when there's lots of these intermittent resources, it'll help on cost savings across the region and put out that reliability across the whole area. Additionally, you know, when your units go down, I talked about this a little bit earlier, you can lean on other people throughout the region, other utilities. Right now, it looks like we are going to have about, you saw that map earlier, about 65,000 megawatts in the winter and about 66,000 in the summer peak loads signed up for the program. And they'll participate somewhere between the 2025 season and the 2028 season. So there's two seasons. Right now, because there's not actually an organized market, this will be done through bilateral transactions. So what this is, you know, you have deals with people throughout the region. When it's called upon in that morning, you will send energy to that particular utility that needs it. And so what RAP does, it implements a binding forward showing, and it requires entities to demonstrate that they have the capacity that they're promising for the program. It's a binding operational program, so once we sign up, we're obligated to participate. We can have a two-year notice period to get out of it, but when we commit to it, we're committed to it, and we would face potential penalties, for example, if we didn't meet their requirements. What this does is leverage, again, for the future, investment savings across the whole region as our load grows and the intermittent reliability becomes an issue. So the pros for the district is this regional diversity, which I talked about. It gives an increased value for our capacity prices. So we are a utility that is long resources. And with the resource adequacy program started, the capacity values you've seen lately, I mean, we talked about wholesale prices increasing, capacity prices are also increasing. So that 70 to 80% we sell to the wholesale market, some of that is in the form of a capacity price. And so those values we've seen going up. Supporting RAP may also increase our chance for a future organized market. We currently have over 20 participants throughout the West region. So this will, if the market forms, it'll most likely have similar rules to RAP. And finally, the state has jurisdiction over capacity and reliability. So if we don't sign up for RAP, there is the potential for policymakers to make up their own requirements for resource adequacy. We've been in this process multiple years. We've been at the bargaining table. We've got in advantages for us that, you know, we've negotiated along the way. So we feel it's a good program to start with because we've been there since the beginning, and we're not going to rely on policymakers to make rules. On the con side, there will be more work for data exchange and submittals through the RAP program than a standalone program. We'll have less influence on program rules compared to a standalone program, meaning if we're not going to sign up for this program, we would have to come up with something ourselves. You know, before we've had lots of hydro, like I said, in the region, but if we don't come up with this, we're going to have to create some buffer for ourselves. And finally, we may have to reduce our slice sales without mitigations. However, the more we thought about it, we've talked about it many times to the group. If we create our own standalone program, we may have to increase our capacity requirements even above what this program brings to the table. So hard to picture it. You know, right now we're talking, we seem very resource rich. As we look out into the future, though, there will be a lot of changes. And this is getting ahead of those changes. The timeline, so what they are requesting is by December 16th, we commit to signing up for the program. The program is in a non-binding forward showing program, so there's no penalties associated with it. It's just a test. We run through the test, work through the products, make sure everything is working. We have it budgeted roughly $185,000 for next year to pay for our portion of funding Western Powerful for the RAP program. And then in 2025, the program becomes binding. So we commit now, we pay for the budget of Western Power Pool, our portion thereof, and then in 2025, all the rules start. So we test it out for a few years. And then there are people also that can do transitional. There are some people that don't have the capacity requirements yet, so they're going to have a few more years, but they won't get all the benefits of the program between 25 and 28. For example, if you call on a resource, they're at the bottom of the list because they haven't fully signed up for the program.
You said that there's about 20 currently?
Yes.
What's the likelihood of adding to that?
Well, if you saw that map earlier that Janet showed, there's not too many that you could fill in. There's those little areas in Arizona, and so we're pretty much got the whole region covered. The only big one, which I would find unlikely, is in the unlikely event CAISO or California as a whole basically joined the RA program. That would be the big change, which I would find highly unlikely. So our next steps here, we can...
Hey, Sean.
Yeah.
I had a question.
Sure.
Commissioner Bowles.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Sean, where does natural gas fit in this whole picture? Because only hydro and natural gas can throttle up and throttle back. And is there any encouragement for natural gas to maintain or expand, or is it going to continue to decrease? And how does that affect us?
So how that affects us is probably should throw in too. So coal has to go away in 2025. Beyond the intermittent solar and wind we talked about, with coal going away in 2025, and many gas units going offline probably in that time period, capacity will be shorter. So our resource value will go up, and also what they're literally going to replace this with is solar, wind, and energy storage, batteries. Okay? And so what this does is actually, yes, Commissioner Smith shakes his head, and yes, that is what we're trying to bring to your attention, that everything looks fine now, but gas units will most likely not get built. They will not be incentivized to be built, even though they probably should be. So that is more of a reason to commit to the RAP program.
How is Southwest drought affecting hydro capacity?
Well, down there, they had like a 50% year, roughly. I forget the exact number. So, yeah, they've had some major issues. So it's usually measured over a 10-year average, so it'll bring it down. And if it keeps happening, it'll just keep reducing that capacity and, again, help the value of our resources.
I think Commissioner Bowles had a follow-up.
Sure.
No, I'm just perplexed.
Yes.
just dismay. It just seems to me that there are, it's great to understand where we are in terms of resource adequacy. And I can understand the angst about or the need to reduce or eliminate coal. But again, just based on some experiences and looking at some things as an example in Fairbanks, Alaska, with their rejuvenation of a gas plant and a battery storage plant, and just struggling in that climate to have adequate resources, and then the cost of literally billions in a very short period of time when the electric resources are not available. I just wonder a bit, not a bit, I wonder a lot in terms of what financial corner we're backing ourselves into. You know, and I just, there's just, anyway, a lack of logic that just stupefies me. And I'm never at a loss for words, but I'm at a loss for words to just try and describe in my thoughts about this whole process. I think it's the right thing to do. I think we're missing a significant point. And that's my editorial, I guess, for the day.
Yeah,
it concerns me.
In California, they have started a program that the state funds, and they'll allow, I think it's roughly 30 megawatt, what's called gas peaker units, to start up, and they can run roughly 200 hours a year. So they've started to finally see the problem after there are a few rolling blackouts, and this year very getting within a cat's whisker of that also. So hopefully we see movement like that in the future, because you're going to need items like that. I've heard it bantied about before, the magic resource, right? The one that
mystery resource.
Mystery resource. Yeah. Okay. So magic is a little extreme, but So I agree with everything you're saying, Commissioner Bowles.
Yeah, the hocus pocus in California this summer, you know, the email went out and people curtailed. A great story. Bottom line is they lifted the lid on gas. And that's what basically saved their butt. You know, the other thing was a real feel good. And we got to do more of that in those kind of situations. But if we don't have a means of getting to gas and maintaining gas, we're just not there.
Correct.
So I'll stop.
Okay. So just wanted to, you know, we'll send out some more information to the commission. We'll come back on December 5th with a board resolution. And, you know, we're going to recommend the district participate in this starting with the summer of 2025. And at any point in RAP, we can exit the program with a 2-year notice should conditions change and we have to exit the program. So we have a pretty good buffer there in terms of fallback. And then after December 5th, if you choose to approve, we would notify Western Power Pool of the decision. Yes, Commissioner Arsenault?
I actually have 4 questions. and we can talk about these after the board meeting if you want.
No.
So can you tell me what happens to non-capacity rich utilities that are in this program?
So that's the difference between the 2025 start date and then what's called a transitional participant that has until 2028 to comply. So there will be utilities that know they can't meet it by 2025, but will have as part of their procurement that runway to get there in the next 6 years.
I guess what I'm thinking of is if you don't own your own hydro dams,
mm-hmm.
and you're maxed out or near max on your system, and yet we're trying to do peak capacity plus 15% to 20%, is there an outline as to how those utilities are going to handle that?
Larger RFPs, literally. And that's why they got the extra 3 years.
Got it.
So we'll know exactly how many people are participating after December 16th. So if the penalties are pretty severe, so if you don't think you can reach it by 2028, they will not sign up.
So thank you. That was question one.
Sure.
Number two, capacity. We heard earlier in the presentation with Janet, capacity is somewhere between $17.50 and $30 per kilowatt hour.
That's the price of carbon in the Climate Commitment Act. So when, for example, a gas peaker bids into the market after January 1st in the Climate Commitment Act, they have to include that price in their bid because that's the amount they're going to have to pay extra to the Climate Commitment Act. So that's the greenhouse gas.
Greenhouse gas.
Well, tax.
And maybe it doesn't have a direct correlation to when we sell our energy and we can get a capacity bump in price, you know, for the green energy, the carbon-free energy. Where I'm going with this is once we join this, would it change or would it negate the value that we would get? Comparative analysis. We're in the program, and we have to sell it to provide for other utilities that are short. What price do we sell it at to them versus if we sold it on the wholesale market and we got the extra capacity for the being green?
So when you're in this program and you get called upon to send them energy, you get the energy price. So the carbon you're talking about will be there.
It will be
there. It will already have been there. Okay. Because they pay you still for the energy, and then they will pay you for the capacity in addition to that.
And the price for the energy would be determined how?
It's determined by the price of energy. Currently, it would be what is it, the mid-sea price, and then there's a little adder on top of that.
Okay. So it's not going to be similar to what we get selling down south during a peak demand?
No.
That's number two.
Okay.
Thank you. What do you envision that total implementation into this program? So now we've got the Western United States minus California in this program. Do you envision that will have any impact on wholesale prices in the wholesale market?
So you're talking just energy prices in general?
Right.
Right. I would think that they're already starting to get built in. You know, ICE has a forward curve. So to the extent those already are looking out and are factored in. This is one of the components that's increase in pricing beyond the carbon. Capacity is another factor. So it gets semi-priced in, yes.
I know, so, in the stock market, the uncertainty can create opportunity in pricing.
Correct.
And I would imagine it's the same in the energy market. But if you create that certainty and you take away the uncertainty, then I guess my question is, would that put more compression on the price? You can think about it.
I can think about it, yeah. Actually, let me think about that.
Sure. Thank you. And so then that was number three. Number four, yes. I'm done. Okay.
No, you can.
I've been writing notes. So number four is full implementation again. And the only outlier is California. What happens to California when they need power? Are they still buying in the wholesale market?
So I've talked about a little bit in other sessions where we are following the California extended day ahead market and also Southwest Power Pools Markets Plus. And as we evaluate those two programs, who's in what program makes a lot of has a lot of impact on your question. So what I would say is it really depends. So if there people are starting, a number of people, I've been to a number of conferences. I went to the CAISO Symposium. I went to the Markets Plus regional meeting last week. And there's a general sense there will be two markets to participate. The rules of the resource adequacy in each is much different. And how those play out will determine the answer to your question. I would say currently in CAISO, how it is envisioned, and it might change before rules are finalized, is, let's see, if you're in RAP and you join the CAISO day-ahead market, you will have, it looks like you're going to have to be compliant in both. So you will probably, to avoid any penalties in either, will have to carry more capacity to avoid penalties because the programs aren't lined up. At this point, it looks like Markets Plus, they're gonna line up their programs better, so you won't have to have that extra capacity. So for a capacity long utility, that means more capacity is needed. More demand means our prices are, our value of our portfolio goes up.
Great.
But all those rules, you know, the rules are being finalized in CAISO probably beginning of next year will be, you know, hammered down. And then the Markets Plus is probably a year behind that.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good job, Sean. I think one of the things that we just cannot lose sight of is, you know, this is intended to be a voluntary program to ensure that we have adequate resources in the Western region so that we don't end up in a situation during peak times where we're facing rolling blackouts. And, you know, we've seen that in other parts of the country. We've also seen the risk of that is increasing in other parts of the country. And I think, you know, there's still a lot to be worked out here. And I think the important thing is just keeping our eye on, you know, how the region comes together to ensure that we have a reliable system for our customers. And it's not an easy one. And this is just another example of a lot of the changes we're facing as a utility industry. What is really good about this is it's the utilities in the region coming together before something happens and then reacting to it. And so it's creating a structure in place that allows people to volunteer in at this point in time and be part of the design of it so that when there's opportunities and also risks at the same time. So,
yeah, there's been a history, I wasn't here for it, that there's been, at the end of the day, people don't get to the finish line when it's a region as a whole, and RAP would be a very critical factor in getting multiple utilities in multiple areas of the West actually agreeing to something. We've had many starts and stops with day-ahead markets that have failed near the end. So this is an important first step, and that's why they're talking about this as an incremental step towards a day-ahead market.
Thank you. I agree. I mean, personally, just my one commissioner's opinion is I agree. I just wanted to get a sense for,
yep,
is this going to impede our wholesale revenue going forward? And if so, to what extent? And so, did a great job. Thank you.
Yeah, no. And it will definitely change the way we market at times. And I think it is incumbent upon us to understand what those impacts would be. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, great. Appreciate the questions.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
That's all I had.
Okay. So we're on to commission items. Commissioners, do you have anything you want to review as I make my way back to my chair?
I have something. Okay. I can pull up my calendar quickly here. So I would just like to make an unbiased pitch for the Waputa Annual Conference, which is going to be coming up on the 30th in Spokane at the Davenport. This is their big annual event. I would like to see my fellow commissioners there if possible. It's going to be a really good conference this year. Of course, the first one since COVID, and we're all able to get together in person. I'm not going to give away the video that is going to be accompanying the conference, but I will tell you I participated in it last week.
You're part of that?
I am, and thank goodness I won't have to. Well, I shouldn't have to do this again. But the videos are most humbling, but they're very, very humorous, aren't they, Randy? Yeah, they are. So anyway, it's worth the price of admission just to come see the video. I'll leave it at that. So thank you.
Just a shout out for Neil. And I can never say Neil's last name.
Neruzzo.
Say it again.
Neruzzo.
Neruzzo's.
Yep.
Do you say the T? Neruzzo's?
Root. Yeah. No, like that's root. That's how I hear him
root.
Pronounce it.
Neruzzo's.
Yeah.
Okay. A nice article in NWPPA on all kinds of things about Chelan PUD. So, nice article. Including our Discovery Center, reinvigorating hydropower. And then there was another one, kind of going back to the Waputa recognition of Larry Peterson accepting the Outstanding Employee of the Year Award. It was nice to see that recognition in the newsletter. Anything else? Dennis, anything? All right. Follow up on delegation of action items from prior board meetings. Do we have anything?
Bear with me one second here. Yep, we had one from the November 7th meeting, which was we had Katie Yunt respond to Mr. Edwards' questions on the Powerhouse 2 modernization project, and she responded by email on November 16th, and you all got a copy of that. And for today, we had the only one we captured was Sean was going to provide additional information whether or not and how we might expect wholesale prices to be impacted by the resource adequacy program.
Okay. Additional public comment at this time. Do we have anybody that has anything else to share with the commission? Do we have any other matters of general business as may necessarily come before the commission today? Seeing none, we are recessed for an executive session. I'm going to read this. Keep our attorney happy here. And, I like that number.
I thought I might.
Went from 60 to, or from 90 to 60, so I like the way the time's going. We're going to be recessing to executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigations to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party and or legal risk is authorized by statute, to consider the selection of a site or acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration will cause a likelihood of increased price is authorized by statute, to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of a decreased price is authorized by statute, and to review the performance of a public employee is authorized by statute as well. And this will be for 60 minutes. No decisions will be made, or no votes will be taken, and we will return in 60 minutes. We are in recess.
You want to take a break? Or?
We are coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. It is 328. We are adjourned.